From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we've been following this week. Grand Marais adventurer Lonnie Dupree finished the last leg of his unsuccessful journey Wednesday when he returned to his base camp on Denali. This was Dupree's third attempt to become the first person to reach the summit alone in winter. Denali's summit is at 20,320 feet. Dupree reached 17,200 feet before life-threatening conditions forced him to turn back. At that point, dangerous weather and snow conditions combined with dwindling food and fuel and led Dupree to turn back. His team at One World Endeavors reported he joined Masatoshi Kuriaki, who was already at the 7,200-foot base camp. Known as the Japanese Caribou, Masatoshi is currently attempting to summit Mount Hunter. Dupree's support team says the two adventurers were to be neighbors until weather cleared up. When conditions improve, Dupree's team will fly in and return him to Talkeetna. Despite the recent cold weather, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources wildlife researchers managed to fit high-tech GPS collars on 31 moose to help determine why Minnesota's moose population continues to decline. According to Lou Cornicelli, DNR Wildlife Research Manager, the project started last week near Grand Marais during the four-day stretch of extreme cold. He said flight safety guidelines dictate no work can be performed below 20 degrees below zero, so the team's helicopter was grounded for most of the first 3 days. Capture and ground support crews faced daytime wind chills as cold as 54 degrees below zero on Monday, the 21st of January, and air temperatures that didn't rise above zero until Thursday, the 24th. Erica Butler, DNR wildlife veterinarian, said despite the cold conditions, the team was able to collar at least 5 to 6 moose a day. Capturing and collaring adult moose is the first phase of a multiple-year project to attempt to determine why moose are dying at unusually high rates in northeastern Minnesota. The DNR intends to put collars on 100 adult moose in the Grand Marais, Ely, and Two Harbors areas. Gunflint Trail outfitter Sue Prom is adding to the growing call to stop Minnesota's annual fall moose hunt in light of the animal's continued long-term decline. The Duluth News Tribune reports Prom has started an electronic petition to convince the Minnesota DNR to cancel the hunt until the moose population begins to recover. Prom, who owns Voyager Canoe Outfitters on Saginaw with her husband Mike, said she is far from against hunting moose, but she said like many others on the trail, they just aren't seeing as many as they used to. Prom said that when she first moved up to the end of the trail 20 years ago, she would commonly see 10 or more moose on a one-day trip to Grand Marais. Now she says this winter, the most she's seen in one night is 2. Prom said the hunt can't be justified in light of the major decline in northeastern Minnesota's moose herd from more than 8,000 as recently as 2006 to about 4,000 today. The DNR this year is moving to add moose to the state's official list of species of concern. That designation, however, offers no protections but is a heads up that the species is in trouble. The DNR's moose specialists say there is no good biological reason not to allow a modest hunt. John Pastor, UMD researcher, recently said it would be better to cancel the hunt than continue it. Meanwhile, State Representative David Dill, who chairs the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee, said he'll hold hearings on the issue during the current legislative session. Minnesota's deer harvest declined in 2012, but officials say it was a safe season for people who took to the woods. Final numbers released Monday of this week show that Minnesota hunters killed nearly 185,000 deer. That's down 4% from 2011. The decline was expected because the DNR issued fewer permits to take antlerless deer in a move to build up the deer population. The archery harvest was up 5%, and the muzzleloader harvest increased by 1%, but the firearms harvest was down 5% from last year. The DNR says only one hunter fatality and 19 injuries were reported. And the Department of Natural Resources is kicking off a series of 5 hearings across the state to give the public the chance to comment on proposed updates to the state's list of plants and animals that are at risk of disappearing from the Minnesota landscape. The DNR is proposing to remove 15 plants and 14 animals from Minnesota's list of endangered, threatened, and special concern species, while adding 67 animals and 114 plants to the list. Overall, the changes would affect 302 species. The list was last updated officially in 1996. The first hearing was this week in Rochester, and hearings are set next week, Wednesday, in Duluth. Post office window hour changes are scheduled to take place in a number of communities in the WTIP listenership area. This week, I talked to the Postal Service's regional spokesman, Pete Nowacki, about reduced hours. Okay, basically what I wanted to talk to you about is the various closings in our particular listener area, Tofte, Finland, Beaver Bay, and Hovland. Now, all those hours have been set, and they're all a little bit different, so run them by me again.
Sure. On March 9th, Beaver Bay will be going to a four-hour office, 12:15 to 4:15 for the window hours. And then 2 weeks later, on the 23rd, Finland will go to 4 hours, 8 to noon. Hovland will go to 4 hours, 11 to 3. And Tofte will go to 6 hours, 8 to 11, and 1 to 4.
Will the savings on this move be pretty dramatic as far as the overall picture is concerned?
Right. We're looking at about 13,000 offices nationwide where we will be trimming some window hours, and this will all be rolled out over the next couple of years. We hope to have everything in place by about September of 2014. And when that occurs, we're looking at annual savings in the neighborhood of $500 million.
Now, I know when the discussion was held here in Tofte and Hovland, it seems like these people had an opportunity to also choose some other alternatives, more rural delivery or moving it into another facility like a grocery store or something like that. Have other communities done that?
Haven't seen it happen yet in my territory. It tends to be that folks want these offices to remain open and they're willing to accept reduced hours as opposed to going to an alternative facility or have their mail brought from another post office. And one of the things is, you know, as far as relocating in a business or something like that, that's still an option. For communities where hours are reduced, we're still more than happy to talk to, say, a convenience store, a bank, anybody else in that community who would be interested in providing some limited services whenever they're open. So there may be the opportunity to kind of double up. You know, you might be able to, we'd have the regular window hours for 4 hours a day, but you might be able to pick up stamps at the bank anytime they're open.
Then this is not necessarily, these moves are not necessarily the first move towards something nobody wants, closure.
That's not the way we're looking at it at all. You know, we kind of went through the closure drill about a year ago, and one of the questions that kept popping up was, can't you just leave it open for a couple hours a day? And that was kind of what we got back to and said, you know, there's a lot of sense here. If we can find a way to keep these offices open, yet also find a way to realize some savings and maybe get these window hours a little bit more in line with the actual customer traffic that comes in there, we're at a point financially where it's very difficult for us to justify leaving a window open 8 hours a day if we might only have five people walk through the door.
Now, of course, the question for a lot of these more rural post offices is that these are people that live out in the sticks.
We're working to try and set up more and more alternative ways that people can access us. They can buy stamps and mail packages through carriers. They can do things online, which I know isn't always a reasonable alternative in more remote areas like what you're talking about. But, you know, we're just trying to find more and more ways to kind of reach folks where they're already doing business so we can maybe reduce our brick-and-mortar footprint a little bit.
Well, thank you for clarifying this. You know, post offices are real congregating points in small towns, as you will.
Absolutely. We're small-town Facebook.
You've been listening to the North Shore Weekend News Wrap-Up. To hear more from the WTIP News team and to check out the full versions of our stories, visit us at WTIP.org. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Jay Anderson, wishing you a great weekend.